Johnny Mack with your daily comedy news on HBO today. Nikki Glaser's Good Clean Filth makes its debut, which is good timing for me because the leadoff story is from the Wall Street Journal, and it's about Nikki Glaser, who said, "Comedy for me didn't start in school or at the dinner table. It began in our family living room when I was 10, watching comedians on TV with my parents. I studied the ones my parents liked best, especially those who used add-on jokes in their routines, like David Spade and Kevin Nealon." Wait, I feel so old. When you were 10, your parents were watching David Spade and Kevin Nealon? When I was 10, my parents were watching Bob Hope. I digress. David Spade and Kevin Nealon, they tossed in snarky bonus lines that made my father laugh hardest. For example, I remember Wendy Liebman on The Tonight Show in the 90s. "I just quit smoking." And when the audience applauded, she added, "Crack. You never saw those extra words coming, but I loved how they could turn a routine dark." The Journal asked Nikki a few questions. "What's the coolest thing you have at home?" "A guitar signed by all members of the band Wilco." "What's a foolish thing you have?" "I bought a guitar on eBay that purportedly was signed by Taylor Swift." "It wasn't. It was just a guitar and a piece of paper with Taylor's signature on it." "What's on her wish list?" "That Taylor Swift would sign the guitar." From NME, Ricky Gervais has responded to having a garbage truck named after him in his hometown. He says it's an honor, and he said honor with a U in it, as the Brits do. Reading Borough Council recently ran a competition where locals could offer names for 6 new food waste trucks. 5 of the names were chosen by children, the 6th apparently not chosen by children. We don't yet know the other names of the trucks, but the truck has been named Ricky Gervais. Human Ricky tweeted, "Is there any greater honor with a U than your hometown naming a garbage truck after you?" Probably not. More from Tim Heidecker's appearance on the Last Laugh podcast, this via the Daily Beast. They were like, "It seems like the no BS bit has evolved into you sort of representing everything you don't like about comedy or that you don't like about certain comedians. Are there people that you take inspiration from in that way?" Tim said, "I mean, I don't want to name names. That's kind of mean. But I grew up in the 80s and 90s. That was sort of the big explosion of the brick wall comics, and there was a certain corniness to it. And as soon as you discovered anything that was a little left of that or a little weirder than that, it made that feel very lame. I'll name a few names. I mean, Jim Brewer has been a tremendous inspiration. Just a few months ago, I did a show at Largo here in LA, and I was testing out some new stuff. But then I saw that Jim Brewer had posted his set list for the night, and I was like, well, I'm going to do his set list." I would have liked to have been backstage and watched Jim react to that. Now, one thing, I know Jim pretty well. We worked together for most of a decade. Jim can read a room, and Jim has a deep well of content. So even if you took away his set and Jim had to go wing a set, he would do it. I've told the story before. We're at the Aspen Comedy Festival. I went out to breakfast with Brewer and Pete Corielli, and Jim over breakfast just goes, "You know, there's no festival at this festival," and just starts riffing over breakfast, and Pete and I are chuckling. Well, later that night, at a show that also included George Carlin and Dave Chappelle, okay, Brewer did a routine about how there's no fest at the festival, and he crushed it. Anyway, the Daily Beast said, "I saw you shared Jim Brewer's anti-vaccine bit that just went viral on Twitter. And as I was watching that, it's hard to top that in terms of bad comedy, right?" Yeah, that bit didn't go over too well on social media. Poor Jim. Heidecker said, "Yeah, I mean, it'll influence me in ways I can't predict. I'll just start showing up in certain sound effects I'm doing. But I've noticed so many of these comedians use Instagram now. These very heavily edited clips with captions and big letters. It looks really professional. It looks like it should be good content. And then very rarely is. It's always a little disappointing. So yeah, there's obviously a scourge of it right now, and I don't really understand the appeal of it. I mean, a lot of it is confirmation bias and people like, that's how I feel, that's how I think. Not to sound like Trump, but that's on both sides too. There's a ton of speechy style comedy that's not quite making me laugh." The Post-Journal caught up with Jeff Foxworthy, and it's been a beat since I've broken out half-assed Jeff Foxworthy impression. Oh, it's coming. Get ready. Jeff Foxworthy views the art of making people laugh as a gift. "I just view it as a gift. Okay, you know, the same way that some people are great at nursing or some people are really good at, like, masonry. So it's just a gift." Jeff is going to be at the National Comedy Center's Lucille Ball Comedy Festival. That's coming up in August. Jeff will be there August 5th. I'm thinking heavily about going up there and connecting with Kelly Carlin. And I know Jeff too, so maybe I will go up August 5th. I just have been so busy, I haven't been able to make actual plans yet. Jeff was supposed to be there both in 2020 and then 2021, both canceled due to the pandemic. Jeff said, I'm just thrilled there's a Comedy Center somewhere. I know I'm a little biased, but there ought to be one. I think it's very cool that there actually is a place that acknowledges this about comedy. I've been doing this a long time, but it was kind of like the one in my mind that's circled. I'm like, well, this is special. This one's different because you're going to a place where people recognize and appreciate the art form. I remember as a little kid, my parents would watch The Tonight Show from my room and I could hear it. And I wasn't really interested in the actors, but if it was a stand-up comic, I'd get out of bed and I could peek through where the door closed at the hinges. I was just fascinated with the idea of making people laugh. And it's funny, like, if you go back and talk to people I grew up with, they're not surprised that I became a comedian. He recalled a bit about how he and his wife pack a suitcase for a trip. I literally sat down and wrote a 30-minute bit about that, and then I would go on stage and start playing with it, and I would, instead of adding clay, I would start cutting things away, like, okay, this part works, this part doesn't work, let me cut that off, and both kind of end up at the same place. But I find, you know, when I was younger, my bits were 5 minutes long, now they're 20 minutes long. I'm not a one-liner guy, I am more of a storytelling guy. From the Daily Mail, could Jim Jefferies be the next Russell Crowe of the National Rugby League? That's a thing in Australia. The Daily Mail writes, Jim Jefferies is a megastar in the United States these days. Time out. No, he's not. He's a really good comedian. He can sell out big arenas. If you're into comedy, you love Jim Jefferies. But why don't you go ask 10 people who Jim Jefferies is? 10 of them aren't going to know. He's not a megastar in the United States, Daily Mail. Doesn't mean he's not funny. Doesn't mean I don't like him. But he's not a megastar. But like many rugby league supporters on the northern beaches of Sydney, he grew up idolizing the Bears. Now there are talks of bringing back the iconic red and black in a joint expansion bid with Perth. Russell Crowe saved South Sydney from financial ruin since becoming co-owner in 2006. Jim Jefferies believes he can drum up plenty of Hollywood support, including Brad Pitt, to add clout to the Bears' bid for readmission. Jefferies told News Corp, it would be a lifelong dream to have the Bears return. It truly would. There's nothing in my life I would rather spend my money on than seeing the red and blacks run back out onto the pitch. I remember the moment Russell Crowe bought Souths, and I said to myself, if I ever have any money, the first thing I'm doing is I'm getting the Bears back in the league. Now I have an opportunity to help a little bit. The Bears are everyone's second team, but for me, they were my first, second, and third team. It would mean the world to me to have the Bears back. I'm keen to be involved as much as possible. This is pretty cool. I've been a Bears fan my whole life. They broke my heart when they kicked them out. I was devastated. I thought the pain would go away, but it never really has. Wonder when they got kicked out. Google machine, tell me. Sydney Bears. The club was established in 1908, blah, blah, blah. The club merged with the Manly Warringah Sea Eagles to form the Northern Eagles for the 2000 season. The merged club lasted only until 2002 when it split again, with the Bears not returning to first grade and getting bounced to the second tier rugby league competition where the Bears continue to play today. I see. So they're like D2 rugby. I see what's going on here. The chairman of the Bears, Daniel Dixon, said, Jim is Australia's biggest comedian. Having the likes of him on board with the Bears brings together the deep love and passion for the Bears' heritage. And it's great to have Jim now wanting the U.S. to get behind the Bears. From Chortle, Kate Barron writes, why fat jokes are okay, but only when they're done well. Kate Barron says, I'm pro-choice, especially when it comes to comedy. As someone who has laughed their way through a funeral, I don't believe there's a single topic that's off limits. Everything can and should be discussed, but with everything else they got on their plate, the last thing fat people need are cheap jokes at their expense. See what I did there? As someone who has spent the better part of her life overweight, I've heard and been the punchline for more fat jokes than I care to remember. Now, after losing 13 and a half stone, I identify as skinny fat. I'm American. What's a stone? Google machine, help me out. Brits are like stupid yank. 14 pounds. Now I have to do math. Why are you giving your weight in 14-pound increments? So 14 times 13.5, 189. Kate Barron lost 189 pounds. Great. She identifies as skinny fat, thin enough for my weird Uncle Larry to hit on me, but fat enough for people to still call me brave for wearing a two-piece bathing suit in public. When you make a joke about someone's height, race, or something else they have no power over, there's no implication that you're judging their worth as a human being, but many of the fat jokes that exist are laced with genuine malice and disgust because there's a widely held stigma that fat people are lazy, unattractive, stupid, and a product of their own doing. Our whole society is fat-phobic, and the world is literally not built for fat people to live comfortable lives. Just ask the ride attendants at Thorpe Park, whose job it is to tell the chubsters to turn around and do the walk of shame because you're not going to fit on the ride. I remember being on a first date at a Toronto comedy club long before I started my stand-up career, and the comedian on stage, who was a thin, conventionally attractive man, was going on and on about how disgusting and unbangable fat women are. Pretty hard to ignore the elephant in that room, which was me, obviously, and my own internalized weight bias made me believe that my feelings of humiliation and self-loathing were deserved and justifiable. I firmly believe, though, that fat jokes are funny when done well and are best consumed in the dark with chocolate to ease the blow. Adam Rowe has a great set about fat people, and he starts it off by acknowledging that he himself is fat and no longer wants to be associated with fat people. It's a great bit that's well thought out and not just some throwaway hack line. Do you need to be fat, have been fat, or be on your way to be fat if you want to make a fat joke? No, but it's important to acknowledge the intent, and the messenger will change the tone of the joke. Great comedy is about being able to take the trauma and pain of a subject and make it funny in a clever, new, and surprising way. Running around on stage saying blah, blah, blah with outstretched arms to mock a fat person is not close to clever. Every comedian worth their weight should do, or at least try to do better. Kate Barron will be at the Edinburgh Fringe show. It's called Losing Myself, August 4th to the 28th. And from Cheat Sheet, Joel McHale says, I love pretzels. And especially love the Rolled Gold pretzels. They've been around 106 years. Obviously iconic. They're a legacy. And they decided to celebrate the 106 years with a hunt for gold, where people can win more than $106,000 worth of actual gold bars. Is Joel McHale doing some sort of product placement here? Why are you talking about Rolled Gold pretzels? But anyway, they've been around for 106 years and Joel McHale loves them. That's your comedy news for today. Follow the show for free on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you get your shows. You can buy me a coffee.com/dailycomedynews if you'd like to support the show. See you tomorrow.